we're holding on Gimel Amud Aleph, the fourth line. We started discussing about what kinds of people, well, the Mishnah had told us 11 different types of people who are potter from Re'iyah, from coming to the, appearing in the Beis Mikdash on Yom Tov, as Rashi had said, or bringing the korbanos that go along with that, as Tosfos had said. So there were 11 different people. One of them we said was a cheresh, and we were discussing what exactly is the definition of a cheresh for this purpose. So we said that a cheresh in most places in Shas means somebody who can't hear and can't speak. So in other words, he was born deaf or became deaf at a very young age and never learned to speak. On the other hand, we said, usually for most purposes in halacha, a person who is only deaf or only mute is considered like a pikeach, is considered like a normal person and is chayiv in most mitzvahs. However, we brought a paraisa that said that people who are only deaf or people who are only mute are in fact potter from Re'i. What we said was they're potter from Re'iyah, however, they're chayav in the mitzvah of Simcha. One of the mitzvahs of Yom Tov is to be b'simcha, in particular when the Beis Mikdash is standing, ein simcha el b'basar, so it means eating meat of shlamim, or meat of korbanos. So therefore, that mitzvah they have. So the Gemara says, my shna the inyan Re'iyah d'ptiri, why is it when it comes to Re'iyah, we're saying that people who are deaf or mute, never mind both. If they're both, we said they're potter mikol mitzvah samudas vater. But if they're only one or only the other, why regarding Re'iyah are we saying they're potter? In Simcha, the Mechayvi, why are we saying they're chayev in the mitzvah of Simcha? And the answer is, in Re'iyah, goma Re'iyah, Re'iyah mehakel. Because when it comes to Re'iyah, we learn by Xeda Shava on the word Re'iyah from Hakel. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Hakel sa'om ha'anoshim ha'anoshim ba'tach. Gather together, we know that the mitzvah of Hakel is every the year after Shemitah, the Sukkos of the year after Shemitah, all the Yidden have to gather in the Beis Mikdash, and the king reads to them certain parts of Chumash Devarim. So the pasuk says, gather together all the people, ha'anoshim va'anoshim ba'atach, the men, the women, and the children. Uchtiv, and the pasuk continues, actually the previous pasuk says, v'voicho Yisrael le'ro'os, when all the Jewish people come to be seen in the Beis Mikdash. So we see, in other words, that Hakel is associated with Re'iyah, with being seen in the Beis Mikdash. So we make a Zeta Shava that just like people who cannot hear or who cannot speak are potter from Hakel, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, so those people are also potter from Re'iyah. They're also potter from appearing in the Beis Mikdash on Yom Tov and from bringing the Korbanos because they're potter from Hakel. Well, the question is, v'hasim nolan, well, where in turn do we know that they're potter when it comes to Hakel? Again, if they're cheresh, a classic cheresh, which is they can't hear and they can't speak, so then, of course, they're potter from all mitzvahs, hamuras patera, so naturally they'd be potter from Hakel as well as from Re'iyah. But we're saying that a person who's only deaf or only mute is chayev in most mitzvahs. We're saying they're potter, including their chayev in the mitzvah of Simcha. We're saying they're potter only from Re'iyah and from Hakel. So where do we know that from? Once we know it by Hakel, okay, then we have a Zeta Shava to know by Re'iyah. But where do we know it by Hakel? Because the pasuk says, what's the purpose of Hakel? L'man yishmu'u l'man yomu, in order that they'll hear and in order that they'll learn. V'tanya, and we learn in a braisa. L'man yishmu'u means prachu medaba ve'ena shemea. The words l'man yishmu'u, in order that they should hear, excludes somebody who can speak, but he can't hear. Since he can't hear, in other words, then he's not going to be able to accomplish, he's not going to be hearing the king read from the Sefer Torah anyway. Therefore, he's potter. And Ulaman Yomadu, when it continues, in order that they will learn, means Prat L'Shemea Ve'en Medaber. That comes to exclude somebody who can hear, but he can't speak. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like a person who's mute, who's unable to speak. It sounds like the Braise is saying that since he can't speak, he's not going to be able to learn Torah. So the question is that really so? Lememr and Chila Mishtori like Gomar. So you're telling me that if somebody is not able to speak, then he's not able to learn Torah? You have an example. There were these two mute people. They lived in Rebbe's neighborhood. They were bnei brate de Rabbi Yechanan ben Gudgada. They were the sons of, they were the grandsons of Rabbi Yechanan ben Gudgada. Others say that they were his nephews. If we say they were his nephews, by the way, it would mean that there was Arichos Yomim in that family, because Rabbi Yechanan and Gur Yudah, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, was actually one of the Levim who still served in the Bis Mikdash. Rebbe is a couple of generations later. So if we say that they were the sons of Rabbi Yechanan and Gur Yudah's sister, then there would have had to be quite a bit of Arichos Yomim in that family. If we say that they were the sons of his daughter, then maybe it could work with relatively normal lifespans. Anyway, so these two, the chol emas to have ayo Rebbe the Bein Medrasha, whenever Rebbe would go into the Bis Medrash, have ayli v'yasvi, they would also come in, and they would, v'yasvi kamayhu, and they would sit there in front of them, or really kamei, it's supposed to be in front of him, in front of Rebbe, as some with him, and they would listen to everything that's being said, uminaydi v'reshayhu, they would nod with their heads, making it, which looks like they're understanding and nodding at what they're hearing, and they would move their lips as if like they want to be able to say something, but they can't because they were mute. Oh boy, Rebbe Rachmi Alayhu. So Rebbe davened for Rachmanus from Hashem on them, the Itzu, and they were healed, and now they're able to speak. The Ishtakach, and it turned out once they were able to speak, they found out to have a Gmiri Hilchasa, that they knew all the halachas, which means Rashi says Mishnayas, the Sifra, the Sifri. They were familiar with the whole Sifra and Sifri, which are Midrashe Halacha and Chumashim Vayikra, Vamidbar and Dvarim. V'chola Hashas, or V'chola Talmud, really, it's supposed to say, and the entire Talmud, the Talmud, the Gemara, of course, hadn't been composed yet in the form that we have it. What we mean, all the discussions of the Chachamim on the Mishnayos and the Braises that make up the core of what the Gemara is. So in other words, so even though they were mute all these years, they were listening very carefully all those years that they spent in the Beis Medrash, and sure enough, they knew a tremendous amount. So we see that even though they couldn't speak, they could still understand. And eventually, when they were able to speak, then we were able to see that. So why would we say that just because it says Laman Yilmadu, why are we excluding from that people who can't speak? L'chora, based on this story, we see that they can learn. Mazutra, Koribe Laman Yilamd. So Mazutra says, right, but even though the Pasuk says Laman Yilmadu, in order that they should learn, really, since like we talked about yesterday, words in Sefer Torah are not written with Nekudas, and therefore we can punctuate them with different Nekudas and douche in different things from there. The same way we can douche in the words, the word Laman Yilmadu, we can douche in it as Yolamdu, they will teach. Well then, in that case, a mute person is not able to teach. Therefore, that's why the Braisa is saying that we're excluding them, that they're not Chayiv and Hakel. Even though, yes, they would be able to learn, but they're not able to teach. So that would be how we'd learn. Rav Ashi says, I can prove that. Even if you didn't have the case of those two nephews or grandsons of Rav Yechon ben Gudgada, even without that, obviously we have to understand that when the Tana is learning from the words Laman Yilmadu to exclude a mute person, we have to be able to understand his drasha that way. Vaday Laman Yilamdu. Of necessity, even without that question from the story that we just had, we would have to say that it means Laman Yilamdu, that the pasuk means that they should be able to teach others. Because the Isaf Daitach Laman Yilmadu, if we just were meant to read it as the word Yilmadu in order that they should learn, and you would argue and you're going to argue like our original Havamina, that a person who is unable to speak is unable to learn, well, we would say the kiven de leishoma legomer. So then we would say the kiven de leishoma. Well, by the same token, a person who has not heard legomer is also not going to be able to learn because if he can't hear, then he's not going to be able to learn. Haim leman yishmu nafka. Well, then a person who can't hear, we're already learning from the word leman yishmu. So in other words, what is the Braisa telling us? It says Laman Yishmu'u, Laman Yilmu. Laman Yishmu'u, we're learning from that a person who can't hear is Potter from Hakel. And we're saying by the Zeder Shava, that tells us the same thing as far as Ri'ya. And from Laman Yilmadu, we're learning somebody who is unable to speak. So in other words, what are we saying? If we said that both of those are referring to one person, and we're saying because he can't hear, and therefore because he can't hear, and therefore he can't learn, then it wouldn't need to say Laman Yilmadu. We wouldn't be learning anything extra from that. Obviously, somebody who's Laman Yishmu is obviously not learning. So Chaim Laman Yishmu Nafka. Just for the person who can't hear, we only need the words Laman Yishmu. So therefore, if we have the words Laman Yomadu, it has to be to teach us about another type of person. It can't mean the same person who's unable to hear and therefore is unable to learn, because already you know that's a Laman Yishmu. So let's look at the words of the Gemara again. So Vade Laman Yomaduhu, Laman Yolamduhu. Definitely we have to understand that the word is supposed that the word not is supposed to be read. We read it in the Torah, Laman Yomadu, but we have to doubtion it necessarily as Laman Yolamdu. The Isak that is Laman Yomadu, because if we were gonna say that we're just looking at the word Laman Yomadu, the way they're pronounced, and the Kivan de Lagishtoi like Gomar, so we would say that if we were to say that the word Laman Yishmu Laman Yomadu means to exclude anybody who is unable to learn, well, and we were going to say that somebody who can't speak is not able to learn either. The Chivin de Leishoma Leigomar, if you have, by the same token then, somebody who can't hear can't learn either. Haim Laman Yishmu Nafka, well, that person who can't hear, we're going to learn from Laman Yishmu. Elavade Laman Yolamdu, who necessarily, therefore, the Laman Yomadu is really meant to be Daushin as Laman Yolamdu, and it's talking about a different kind of person. So you have, in other words, conceivably you could have a person who can't hear, but nevertheless, Tosfos points out, you could have a person, let's say, who can't hear now, but he used to be able to hear, and therefore he also learned to speak. So now, even though he's deaf, he's able to teach other people. So you can't be Mamayakim from the words Laman Yolamdu. On the other hand, but nevertheless, the Pasuk is saying that because he can't hear now, the purpose of him going now would be able to hear and then be able to teach others, and now he's not able to hear, so therefore he's Potter. So therefore, the word Laman Yolamdu is not at all referring to him, because him we already know from Laman Yishmu, even though he's capable of being Melamed what he learned before, but he's not capable of hearing now, this time what the king is reading. So therefore, necessarily, the Laman Yolamdu must mean so a different kind of person, namely somebody who's not able to teach others, namely because he's mute. So not even a person who previously learned and was able to teach. What we're talking about, even somebody who now is able to hear what the king is saying, but he's not able to teach it to others because he can't speak, then he's also potter. So necessarily, therefore, even if we didn't have the story of Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgoda's grandsons or nephews, and we didn't know that an Elam is ever able to learn Torah, we would know automatically, because he can't teach people Torah, it must be the Pasuk is Mamayatim. Otherwise, who else is the Pasuk being Mamayat with the words Laman Yolamdu? We can learn the Rashi over here. There's a Rashi in the middle of the Amud that clarifies it. The Rashi says, V'kivin delay shoma, it's about the middle of the Amud. Anan sadi delay gomer. You're going to say, if a person can't hear, then we are effectively Aegis. We can see for ourselves, delay gomer, that if he can't hear, then he can't learn. The kivin detnan laman yishmu. Now, since the Braisa had said that the words laman yishmu prafam adabav ena shemea, that the words laman yishmu exclude somebody who, even though he's able to speak, is not able to hear. He became deaf later in life. Well, the anan sadi. Now we would know. We are Aegis. The time of mashum delay gomer. Why is he potter? Because from now on, he's not able to learn, in the sense that shalo yavin kol ma she'omrim lefanav, he's not going to be able to understand everything that people are saying in front of him, because he can't hear. Well then, lomali l'madra kru l'man yomadu, then why would we need the pasuk to continue with the word l'man yomadu and say prat l'shemea ve'en medaber? That, why would we again say that the word l'man yomadu would exclude somebody who can hear and can't speak? We wouldn't need that. If we assume, as the Habam, and it was, that somebody who is unable to speak is not able to learn either, then automatically he would be excluded by the words Laman Yishmu. So in other words, if the words Laman Yomadu meant to exclude anybody who can't learn, well then we would assume neither a deaf person can't learn because he can't hear, and a mute person can't learn because he's unable to speak, which was according to our Habam. No, we have to say that the Tana to begin with knew that even somebody who can't speak is capable of learning. So even if we didn't have the story of the two mutes, we would know that that's the case to begin with. So therefore we can't exclude mute people on the basis of the words Laman Yishmu, because they can in fact hear and they can in fact understand. Therefore, it must be that we're being mamayit them from the word laman yomdu. Hilkach, therefore, Ravashi is saying, vade laman yolamdu, who the darish, necessarily we must be darishing the word laman yomdu as laman yolamdu to say that it means that a person who can't teach others is not somebody who's chayev in hakil himself. So that's what Ravashi is saying, in other words. If we thought that the Tana assumed that a mute person cannot learn, then the word Laman Yishmu would cover both him and the deaf person. So it must be that there are actually two different types of people, one who can't learn because he can't hear, the other one who could learn, but nevertheless can't teach, and therefore we might each one from a different thing, from Laman Yishmu and Laman Yilmadu or Yilamdu, respectively. So here, Tosfos, as I said, points out that you could have, in other words, the point is, the person who is able to speak, but he's not able to hear, he may be able to teach Torah that he learned previously, but he's not able to teach what he learned, what he heard just now in Hakel, because he can't hear it. Therefore, that's why the Torah is pondering it. Because the whole point is that he should be able to man yalamdu in order that he should be able to teach others. So that's that then. So we see that either a deaf or a mute person are, you have a mute to tell us that they're potter from Hakel. Once they're potter from Hakel, then we have the Zeta Shava on the word Leirois, it says by Hakel, and the word that says that people come, Yeroes Pnei Hashem Alekecha, that it means that therefore such people are also potter from Re'ia. So that's where we are right now then. So the Mishnah, when it told us that a cheresh is potter, it meant the classic cheresh, who's in the same category as shoter v'katan, is potter from everything, because he's potter from all mitzvahs amuras b'Torah, because he doesn't have das. When it comes to, and therefore he's potter from Re'iyah and from Sifra. On the other hand, a cheresh or an ilim, one who's only deaf or only mute, is chayev in simcha, just like he's chayev in most mitzvahs. However, he's potter from Re'iyah because of the Gzeira Shavu, let me say. Okay. Another din, Amr of Tanfum.
Based on that, how does the Torah approach mental illness? Is it a cheresh or katan?
We're going to talk about tomorrow, Beis Hashem. We're going to talk about Ezeu Shoyte. We're going to talk about that in the Gemara tomorrow. I mean, the short answer is that a Shoyte, as we're going to define it in the Gemara tomorrow, is potter mikol mitzvah samuris v'torah. Because he doesn't have das, so you can't impose on him mitzvahs. Now, what that applies to various degrees of mental illness, I mean, it's going to depend on the specifics. One of the things we're going to discuss tomorrow is the Gemara gives us a few symptoms of a shoyta. We'll discuss tomorrow, Beis Hashem, it's at the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. Does it have to be those simonim? In other words, so if a person exhibits other symptoms, but not those, then he's not a shoyta. Or is it that a shoyta can be defined any way where we see that a person is obviously not completely mentally there? So Beis Hashem, we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. Obviously, if they can cure him of the illness, well, then that's the same thing as if a person is cured of his deafness or his, or any other handicap, then good, then he'll be chayav in mitzvahs. But obviously we should do that if at all possible. But until then, he's potter from most mitzvahs. Should be mentioned, by the way, and I think I mentioned this briefly yesterday, that the Gemara does mention in Gittin and in some other places that if a person goes mute later in life, so even though we said he's not a classic cheresh, we do have to be concerned that maybe what made him mute may have also affected his brain. It may have been a stroke or something. So we have to test him with a few different kinds of questions in order to make sure that he's still all there mentally. And if he is, then he has the dinim of a normal person. He's chayiv in all mitzvahs, amuris b'Torah, and he can give instructions in writing or with nodding his head or whatever to give a get to his wife and so on. If a person is deaf, now yesterday we talked about an opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Da'abai that said that if a person is blind in one eye, he's potter from Re'iyah. So now we have, in a similar vein, Rabbi Tanchum says that if a person is cheresh ba'oznei achas, if he's deaf in one ear, potter min Re'iyah, then he's also potter from Re'iyah. Shenema ba'oznei hem. Because again by Hakel, and again from Hakel we learn from Gzeira Shava to Re'iyah. The pasuk says that the Torah has to be read ba'oznei hem in their ears. So that implies two ears for every person. Tosfos points out an interesting thing from the Yerushalmi that connects with this week's parasha. The parasha describes the clothes of the kohenim, and it says, "V'livnei Aaron tasa kutonos." That you should make kutonos, the plural of ksones, for the kohenim. So how many does each one need? You have machlokes whether there needs to be two outfits for each one or only one. So because after all, the pasuk says the plural. So does it mean the plural as in you need a plural two for each one, or does it just mean that you need? Does it just mean that you need altogether for all the kohenim, you need multiple kesonis? So by the same token over here, does osnehem mean at least two ears for each person? Then one ear is going to be putter. On the other hand, if we say, like by the kesonis, that you only need one for each one, well, by the same token, as long as each person has one functioning ear, then there's still going to be chayiv because you still have osnehem collectively. Anyway, Rav Tanchum is going according to the opinion that says that he's putter. Shenem about osnehem because the putter is in their ears. So Gemara says, what do you mean? Ba'ai Ba'oznehem, mi bo'ilai Ba'oznehem to call the Yisrael. What do you mean? The word Ba'oznehem means, like we just said, the other possibility, that it means collectively in all the ears of the Jewish people. The answer is, ahumi neged ko Yisrael nafka. Yeah, but that we learn from the pasuk that it says that it has to be in front of all the Jewish people. So therefore, automatically, it means that all of them are listening. The Gemara says, no, you mean neged ko Yisrael, because no, if we only had that pasuk, neged ko Yisrael, haba amin afagab l'shami. You would think maybe it means that they're yotze even if they don't hear, which means, in other words, Tosfos says we're not talking about where they're deaf. We said before that if they're deaf, we're being mimites, and now we're talking about, let's say, they're too far away to hear. So then so if it's a negative ko Yisrael, it might mean that it's good enough that they're there even if they don't hear. And therefore the pasuk is saying Ba'oznehem, they have to actually be close enough to hear. So we're learning from Neged Ko Yisrael that they have to be there, and we learn from Ba'oznehem they actually have to be close enough to hear. So we use the word Ba'oznehem for that. We don't have it available to teach us that every person has to have two functioning ears. The answer is Arhumi, Laman Yishmu Nafka. Okay, the fact that they all have to be close enough to hear, we learn from the word Laman Yishmu. So therefore, we have the word Ba'oznehem extra, and therefore the word Ba'oznehem can teach us that each one has to have two working ears. Again, from the Yerushalmi that Tosfos says, it would actually be subject to a machlokes tanoim, but the Gemara over here is taking it as a given that everybody would agree with this. Similarly, Omer of Tanchum chigur v'rag le'achas potem n'riyah. By the same token, Rav Tanchum says that if a person is lame in one leg, then he's potter from riyah. Shenema regolim, because the posuk says that they have to, the posuk says sholosh regolim, which implies regolim is plural, so it means you have to be able to walk on both legs. The Gemara asks again, we're going to use that later on in the Gemara to say that it means that a person who has artificial legs is potter. A cabin are artificial legs. So in other words, if a person had both legs or both feet amputated and he's walking on artificial legs, So then he's potter. So we learn that from the word regolim. So how do we have it available to also tell us that it means people who have only one working foot? And the answer is ahumit pa'omim nafka. The answer is that we learn not from the word regolim, but rather from the word pa'omim, where it says sholish pa'omim bashana. Now usually we translate sholish pa'omim bashana means three times a year. But as the Gemara is going to explain now, the word pa'omim actually also means steps. Which therefore Tosfos says, so really what it is when the Gemara says later, regolim prapa bale kabin, that's really only an asmachta. Really we're learning it instead from the word pa'omim. So the word pa'omim is teaching us people who have two artificial legs are potter, and the word then, and the word regolim then is teaching us that a person who's lame in one leg, so even though he has both legs, but one of them is not working, then he's also potter from rishon. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when it says pa'omim, ein pa'omim elo raglayim. The word pa'omim is another word for feet. V'chein hu omer, you have a similar thing. You find in the pasuk, k'mesener rogel, the foot will trample it, raglay oni, the feet of the poor people, pa'ame dalim, the pa'ame of the poor. Oni and dalim are two different words for poor people. The context is talking about how the goyim, the proud goyim, are going to be humbled and destroyed, and they're going to be trampled by the Jews who now are poor and in difficult situations. The point is, we use the word ragle and the word pa'ame in that pasuk, and they both mean feet. So therefore, we see that the word pa'ame and the word pa'omim means feet. Va'omer, we have another pasuk where we see that the word pa'omim means feet. Mayofu for Amayef Bana Olim Bas Nodiv. A pasuk in Shir HaShirim that says, how beautiful are your feet in shoes, Bas Nodiv, the daughter of the one who volunteered. The Gemara is going to explain in a second, refers to Avram. So therefore we see, so Tamayef means your feet. How beautiful are your feet when you're wearing shoes and going on Aliyah Lerek. So therefore we see that the word Pa'amim means feet. By the way, you're not allowed to wear shoes into the Azara. So what it means is, in other words, just the fact that they're going all the way until, not the Azara, actually the Harabayas, you're not allowed to wear shoes. So therefore it means all the ascent up till the Harabayas, they're wearing shoes. Then they take it off, but all of that is part of the mitzvah. It's all a prerequisite for the mitzvah, and therefore the Pasuk is praising and saying over there how even the Goyish nations praise the Jewish people for going on such a long pilgrimage to Yerushalayim with their shoes. So, in this connection, where we said Bas Nodiv, Dorash Rabba, my dichtiv, my yofel for myech bana olim Bas Nodiv, what does this pasuk mean? How beautiful are your feet in shoes, Bas Nodiv? What is Bas Nodiv? It means kamen noyin ragloy and show Yisrael, how beautiful are the feet that the Jewish people, Bashasha, Oilam the Regal, when they're being Oilam the Regal, that's what it's talking about. And why are they called Bas Nodiv, the daughter of the volunteer? That means Bite Shel Avraham Avinu Shenikra Nodiv. That means the Jewish people are the daughter, the descendants of Avraham Avinu, who is called Nodiv, the volunteer. Shenema Nidive Amim Ne'esafu, as the pasuk says, the volunteers among the nations have gathered together. This means the Gerim, who volunteered from all the different nations to become Gerim. So they all gathered together. Am Elekei Avraham, the nation of the God of Abraham. So we have to ask, why are they called Elekei Avraham? Why is Hashem called in that passage Elekei Avraham, below Elekei Yitzchak Yaakov? Hashem is equally well the God of Yitzchak Yaakov. Why are we focusing on Abraham? Ela Elekei Avraham Shehoya Tchila LeGeir. The reason we mention Avraham is because he was the first of all the Geir. He was the first one who volunteered to discover Hashem. We know he discovered Hashem at the age of 3, and then he continued growing in that. He discovered deeper and deeper things about Hashem as he got older and older. The Rambam says he was 40, etc. The point is that he was the first one to volunteer that and to go and teach the world about it. So therefore, he's called the first of the Gerim. So therefore, the Gerim are all called the people of Avraham, the people of the God of Avraham, in token of Avraham being the first one, being the first one who of all of those Ger. For that reason also, we call it Ger, we call him Ben or Bas Avraham. Tosfos points out a different point also. Avraham is Tchilo LeGerim in the sense that he's the first one to get the mitzvah of Milah, which is one of the essential things that a Ger needs to have. An interesting point is, Maharsha, first of all, points out an interesting thing, and this Gemara is also in Sukkah. Maharsha points out over there that it's not only that Avraham was the first of the Gerim. Why are we mentioning that point specifically in connection with Aliyah LeRegel? A reason is because Avraham was also the first one to do Aliyah LeRegel. He's the first one to go to the site of the Bais Mikdash by the Akedah. So therefore we associate the fact that he was the first of the Gerim and also the fact that he was the first one to be Oilam LeRegel with a carbon. Another interesting point is also you have there's a Rashi in Parshas Vezos Habracha, in the Bracha of Yisachar and Zvulun over there, where it says Amim how you crow Shom Yizbuchu Zivchei Tzedek. So Rashi gives an explanation over there that Zvulun and the people of Zvulun would go out on ships and do merchandise and do business with Goyish nations. So Goyim would come to them to trade with them and do business with them. And then those Goyim would wind up coming to Yerushalayim because they're curious what the Jewish religion is all about, and they become Gerim. So you have a major connection over there between Gerus and Aliyah LeRegel. So therefore, that's also why we're associating them together. Because this is a verse from Rabbi Yosef Shaul Nathanson. So that's what it, but the point is, in other words, we see that the pasuk mentions Pa'amayich, and it mentions Pa'amei Dalim and Pa'amayich Bana'olim. So we see from both of those talking that the word Pa'amim means feet. And therefore, when it says Sholosh Pa'amim Bashana, it means not just 3 times a year you do Aliyah LeRegel. It means that you have to have 2 feet. So therefore, it excludes a person whose feet are amputated and has an artificial leg. And then, from the word regalim, in turn, Reb Tanchum is learning that also a person who's lame in one leg, so even though he has both legs, but one of them is not working, is also part of Aliyah LeRegel because he doesn't have regalim, he doesn't have feet in the plural that he can walk on.
But if they want to go,
but Pashas, they could go. as far as bringing a korban. Now, we talked about, Tosfos pointed out at the beginning of the Masechta, when we talked about Tanim, that they could bring their, they could bring their korban as an adava, but they would, therefore, they would be, they wouldn't be able to bring it on Yom Tov in particular. So therefore, by the same token, I guess the people who are lame, I guess by the same token, they could bring a korban, they could come and they could bring a korban if they want, but Lechora, they would have to bring it as a, as an adava rather than as a chiyuv. Okay. Onward. Since we're mentioning a couple of different drushes that Reb Tanchum said, but we had two things that he said in connection with the dinim of Aliyah Leregel, so now the Gemara digresses to tell us another drusha of Reb Tanchum's. Amar Reb Kahana, Dorosh Reb Nosin Baman Yumi Mishum Reb Tanchum, Mai Dichtiv Vaboy Reik Ein Boy Mayim. The Pasuk said by Yosef that they threw him into a pit, and the pit was empty, there was no water in it. So Mimash Meshanem Vaboy Reik, since it says that the pit was empty, obviously it means there was no water in it. Ella, mayim, enboy, we learn from that. It means there was no water in it. But there were snakes and scorpions in it. So when we say about, we don't mean that it was completely empty. We mean it was just empty of water. Now, Marsha points out over here, and different other Mephoshim point out, obviously the Shvatim did not know that there were nechoshim v'akrabim in it. First of all, the whole point was that Reuben had told them to throw him into the pit because he wanted to save his life. If there's a chosh makrabim in there, then obviously that's not going to save his life. So obviously it means that it was a deep pit. No, they were in the crevices and they didn't know. Another point, Marshall says, is after all, if they knew there were snakes and scorpions in it and Yosef was saved from them, they would have known right away that he's a big tzaddik. They wouldn't be going and selling him then. So obviously it means that nobody knew that they were there. With that said, there is an explanation on this. I think either from the Ramban or the Ur HaChaim HaKadosh, I don't remember, that says that actually maybe they did know that there were snakes, or maybe at least Reuben knew that there were snakes and scorpions in it, but the verdict would be Hashem is more likely to make a nest for a person that involves creatures, the Domim Semeach Uchai, rather than Medab. So for Hashem to interfere with a person's Bechir HaChavshis is a very rare thing. So therefore, like Reuben may have felt that Yosef is actually safer in a pit with snakes and scorpions, where there Hashem can do a nest for him and prevent them from biting him, rather than doing a nest of changing his brother's attitude towards him, that they shouldn't want to kill him or sell him or whatever, where that would be a rare kind of nest that Hashem generally doesn't do. He wasn't supposed to get out. But Reuben planned to put him in there, and later on he'd come and get him back.
Maybe it was so deep that
he
couldn't die or something like that.
No, I mean, Reuven figured it would be only a short time. The pasuk says, "Man, he fully intended to come back soon and then get him. Then, by the time he came back, they'd already sold him to the Ishmaelim." There is, by the way, there is an explanation. This story, this drasha about the pit with the nechoshim v'akrabim is also in the Gemara in Shabbos. It mentions it in connection with the dinim that a menorah is not allowed to be more than 20 amos tall. And there is, in fact, an explanation that says the reason why the Gemara puts them together over there is to imply that this pit was at least 20 amos deep, and therefore they couldn't see the nechoshim v'akrabim at the bottom, just as you wouldn't really see the flames of a menorah clearly above 20 amos. So according to that, it would have been at least 20 amos deep. Okay. Turning up. Since we're talking about cattle, so the Gemara tells us something else in connection with that. Turn it up on him. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broito and Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma. It happened with these two chachamim. It says over here, by the way, Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma. Really, the word ben, it's in parentheses because it doesn't really belong. It's not that his father's name was Chisma. Also, at the end of the end of Dimel of Pirkei Avos, you have the same thing, where in some Mishnayos it says Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma, and there are some Mishnayos, and also in the Siddur, where it says Rabbi Elazar Chisma. There's actually a medrash that says how he got that name, that at one point he didn't know how to be Kodesh al Shema, what we talked about in Masechta Megillah, about davening by the Omud, the first bracha of Shema, for the Tzibur, so he didn't know how to, then Rabbi Kiva taught him, so they sent on him this chasim, that he became stronger, and now he knows what he didn't know before, and therefore they called him Rabbi Elazar Chisma. Anyway. So those two chachamim, Shahochu Lahakdol, Pnei Rabbi Yeshua v'Pkiyin, they went to greet Rabbi Yeshua in Pkiyin. Pkiyin is the name of a city in the north of Eretz Yisrael, in the Galil. Apparently Rabbi Yeshua lived there. And Rashi says it was Yom Tov, and Chayev Adam Lahakdol Pnei Rabbi Beregel, a person is supposed to visit his Rebbe on Yom Tov. So they came to visit Rabbi Yeshua on Yom Tov. Om Lahem, he asked them, Machidoshoy Bibes to Medrash Hayom, what new things were discussed in the Mismedrash today? Amr, the best Medrash at that time was in a different place. We have during Rabbi Yeshua's lifetime, where Rabbi Yeshua lived through the Churban, but the best Medrash was, the central best Medrash was in Yavne, and after that it was in Usha, so it may have was in one or another of those places at the time. Anyway, Amr Loi, so they said, Tamidho, we're gonna tell you something, Tamidecha Anu, we're your Tamidim, Ume Mecha Anu Shoisin, we drink from your water, what are we gonna tell you? Something that's new. And we don't even have the Shus to talk in front of you. Omelahem, he tells them, Afapikain, nevertheless, there must be something. It's impossible to Menachacham not getting together with Miss Medrash that there shouldn't be some kind of Chiddush, some kind of new concept that was brought up. So, first of all, let's start with Shabbos Shami Hoysa. Whose Shabbos was it? We have the famous story in Brachas where they deposed Rabbi Gamliel and as Nasi and appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah instead. And later on, everybody reconciled because Rabbi Gamliel had insulted Rabbi Yeshua a couple of times. So eventually, everybody reconciled, and they had from then on that Rabbi Gamliel is going to be Nasi for a few weeks, and the different Gersois over there were the 2 or 3 weeks, and then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah for 1 week, and they would switch back and forth like that. So now Rabbi Yeshua is asking, whose turn was it this week? Apparently, he had been away from the Beis Medrash long enough that he had lost track. So they told him, Shabbos Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. This Shabbos Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah was the Nasi. So he asked, Amer Hoysa Agada Hayom. So what Agada did he talk about today? Amer Lavi Pashas Hakel. So he asked, Madrashba. So what are you dashing it? Well, the Pasuk is Hakel Asa'om Ha'anoshim Ba'anoshim Ba'atach. Gather together the whole people, the men, the women, and the children. So you have to ask, says Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah. Im anoshim boim lumud. We understand why the men come in order to learn, because they understand Torah. Noshim bois l'shmaya. We understand the women come in order to listen. They themselves are not capable of learning Torah. Tosfos brings over here that there's an opinion of Ben Azai that says that a person is supposed to teach his daughter Torah, but Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah obviously disagrees with that. He's saying women have no particular chiyuv to learn Torah, except what's negeya to them, and the parts that the king reads are not all negeya to them. However, they're coming there at least to listen to words of Torah being said. As the Rambam phrases it, the Hakel is almost like a miniature Matan Torah, so therefore you want the whole people to go there and hear the Torah being read and recreate Matan Torah. So the question is, Taf Lama Boyin, why are the children coming? They're too little to understand. In fact, Marsha points out that it may even be that the Taf that we're bringing over here are even the little tiny babies, even the ones who are newborns and can't even understand anything. So the reason is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, Kedei Litin Schar Lemevi'eihem, in order to give reward to those who bring them, to their parents who bring them, they get reward from Hashem. Tosfos points out that it's on that basis that we bring children to shul. Same idea. Now, obviously, it does say in Shulchan Aruch, the kids disturb in shul, then that's different. But we're talking about over here that to bring them in and of itself is a good thing. Marsha points out an interesting thing over here. If you look at the letters before and after, the letters of Tes, before the Tes you have a Ches, before the Pei you have an Ayin, and after the Tes and the Pei you have Yud and Sadik. So you take those four letters and it spells out the word Eitz Chai, which means how do you keep upholding the Torah? How do you make Eitz Chaim Hima, Machazikim Ba, the living tree of Torah is by bringing the Taf, by bringing even the tiny little children, and they still absorb, and they absorb Torah, they absorb the word that they're hearing even when they're little. There's a vote on this, I think, from the Chidush Arim that says, listen, you think about it, the parents are going to have to bring the kids anyway, practically speaking, because if they're both coming, who are they going to leave the kids with? But Hashem makes a mitzvah out of that necessity and says, you have to bring them anyway, but you bring them not only because you don't have a babysitter to take care of them, but because this way you'll get schar for it. Anyway, so Omer Lahem, so Rabbi Yeshua is very impressed. He says, my golis toiva hoisa b'yadchem, you are a precious jewel in your possession. This vote from Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah will be kashtim ma'ad b'mimeni, and then you wanted to make me lose it, that you were saying you weren't going to say it, and I had to pressure you into it. Why did he consider it such a magdolus toiva? There's a famous thing that says about it. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yeshua's Rebbe, had said on him, Ashrei Yelad, very happy is the mother who gave birth to him. And the Medrash tells the story that his mother, even while she was pregnant, would go around to the Bate Medrash and ask the Chachamim there for a bracha, that her son should grow up to be a Yorei Shamayim. And when he was born, she would take his baby carriage, his crib, around from one shul and one Bate Medrash to another, so that he should absorb words of Torah even when he was little. So Rabbi Yeshua, and that then, therefore, that taka helped, that he became the great Rabbi Yeshua that he was, and therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says that his mother is very fortunate that she had such a son, because she's the one who made it happen. So now, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, you see, taka from the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it validates what my mother did, in the same way as you have to bring even the little babies back. There is, by the way, a sicha in Chelik Yud Tes, one of the sichas for Sukkot, where the Rebbe analyzes this point and says the idea is that you have those two different aspects really in the mitzvah of Hakel. There's a mitzvah that the king has to have everybody gather. So from that point of view, there's no difference between one yid and another. The king has the mitzvah to gather all of them. Then you have the mitzvah on the individual people to assemble. So now we can say that there's differences between the different classes of people, between the men who are capable of learning and the women who are only able to hear but not understand necessarily, and the children, we were saying that they're brought litn schar b'mivyei. Okay. V'oy darash. Furthermore, also Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah darshin another thing. The pasuk says, "Es Hashem he'emarta hayom, v'Hashem he'emircha hayom." The pasuk says, "You he'emarta Hashem today." Moshe says to the Jewish people in Parshas Kisavo, near the end of the 40 years in the desert, near the end of his life. He'emarta, Rashi says over here, means you praise Hashem. On the pasuk, Rashi says it means like you chose Hashem. So you hemauta, you praised or chose Hashem, but Hashem hemirchayim, and Hashem praised or chose you, means Amar Hamakadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, means Hashem says to Jewish people, Atem asisuni chativa achas ba'olam, you made me a chativa, one chativa in the world, which means Rashi says means shevach echad, one unique praise thing that there's nothing else like it. The Oruch brings a similar expression that chativa means davar anikar she'in kamoisai, something that you can recognize there's no equal to it anywhere else. So you made me like that in the world. Vani esa eschum chativa achas ba'olam. So Hashem says, I will reciprocate by making you a chativa achas in the world. Atem asisuni chativa achas ba'olam. You did that. You say that there's nothing comparable to me. Dichtiv shma Yisrael Hashem elokeinu Hashem echad. We pronounce, and we Moshe taught the Jewish people to say that Hashem is one. I will make you a unique chativa, a unique kind of thing in the world. Who is like the people Yisrael, one unique nation in the world. Tosfos brings an interesting idea in this connection. There's actually three things over here that each two of them give eidos about the third. You have the Jewish people, you have Shabbos, and you have Hashem. The Jewish people and Hashem say eidos that Shabbos is a yom menucha, is a day of rest. The Jewish people on Shabbos testify about Hashem that he's one, and Hashem and Shabbos testify about the Jewish people that they're unique among the nation. That is why Tosfos says the bracha, the middle bracha of Shemini Esrei, Shabbos Mincha, begins after Echad Shimcha Echad, or Michamcha Yisrael Goyach Boras. What does that have to do with Shabbos? The other ones we understand. The nighttime one, we start off Atik Yidashdes Yemeshvi B'Shmecha. The daytime one, we begin the Shachris one, Yismach Moshe Matnas Chelkoi. Mustafa we begin to canter Shabbos. What does after Echad have anything to do with Shabbos? That's why Tosfos says, because we're saying that Shabbos and Hashem testify, Shabbos and the Jewish people testify about Hashem that he's one, and the Jewish people and Shabbos and Hashem testify about the Jewish people that they were a unique nation. So therefore we mentioned both of those points at the beginning of that book.
What's it got to do with tefillin, that we don't need tefillin on Shabbos?
The fact that we don't need tefillin on Shabbos is something else, because Shabbos is called an ois, and tefillin are an ois, and therefore we already have it. There's an explanation, in fact, about it, that you need, or Yid always needs, two edim of his Yiddishkeit. So we have, all the time, we have bris milah, it's permanently implanted in a person. So then, on weekdays, we have tefillin as the second aid, and on Shabbos, instead Shabbos, it's the second aid. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Va'af hu posach v'dorash. Also, he then started darshaning as follows. Now, who's the he? Rashi says it refers to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So in other words, we have the two drashas that he said before, the one about Hakel and the one about Hashem Hamauta Hayyim. Now they were continuing and telling Rabbi Yeshua that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said a further drasha, which we're going to discuss now. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Hanana learns, and Marsha also learns, that it means that Rabbi Yeshua then spoke up and started saying a drasha of his own. Now that they had told him the drasha of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so now, according to that, Rabbi Yeshua started saying to them a drasha that relates to the same theme. Namely, the pasuk says at the end of Kehelas, Divrei Chachamim kadarvoinos, the words of the Chachamim are like darvoinos. A darvon is, in English, it's called a goad. It's a long stick with a metal point on the end of it. You use it when you have an ox plow, an ox or whatever animal plowing, you use it to make the ox go in straight lines. The Goyim actually describe in one of their Trubas, they explain what you have is you have the metal point of it actually sticking in to the animal's rump a little bit. And therefore, so what happens if it's going in a straight line, then fine, it doesn't bother it. But if it turns in one direction or another, then the point presses into its flesh and into its muscle on one side or the other and hurts it, and therefore that makes it go back on the straight line. Anyway, so the pasuk says the words of Chachamim are like darvonis, uchamasmeris neturim, and like planted nails, balei asuros, the masters of gathering, nitnu meiroya echad, that were all given by one shepherd. So, he, meaning according to Rashi, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and according to Rabbeinu Hanano and Marsha, Rabbi Yeshua, darshan, this pasuk phrase by phrase, lama nimsha l'divrei Torah l'darvon, why are divrei Torah compared to a goad, to this short metal piece that makes the ox go the right way? Loi malach, to tell you exactly that. Ma darvon zem chavanas aparta l'tlameha, just like a darvon makes the cow go in the right way along the furrows to plow straight lines in the field. Lohoti chayim la'olam, and in that way it brings out life to the world, because when you have a neatly plowed field, then you're able to plant it and produce the crop which people can live off that. The same way words of Torah direct a person from ways of Nisa to ways of life. In other words, without Torah, a person would go completely in the wrong direction in ways that bring death, dashmiyistika death even, and ruchniyistika death to themselves and to others, and instead the Torah brings a person to dashmiyistika and ruchniyistika life. So now you're going to, in fact, the Ran explains in one of his drushes, the famous Rishon, the Ran gave a series of drushes to explain to the people of his Kehillah about the fundamentals of Yiddishkeit. So he discusses this Gemara over here in one of his drushes. He explains, in other words, a person has a certain natural chokhmah, and that chokhmah might lead him completely in the wrong direction. So the Torah teaches him to direct his chokhmah to the right ends, just like the Dorvan gets the ox to go in the right direction and accomplish something constructive.
Doesn't sound like a negative.
Well, we're saying, in other words, that you're going to have, eventually, a person outgrows that. Eventually, a person outgrows the cow-like thing. Fine, but at least to begin with, it directs a person to use his chokhmah in the right way, rather than. The point is, in other words, it's not even at the beginning. I mean, ultimately, a person has a yetzahara. A person can very easily rationalize themselves with their chokhmah to go completely off the deck. So therefore, the divrei Torah, the divrei chachamim, would make a person go on the straight path. Well, I mean, chokhmah could make it all more dangerous. A foolish person, there's only so much they can do. A smart person can cause a tremendous amount more damage. Therefore, you need, in particular, the chokhmah needs to be directed in the right way.
Otherwise, you can justify
its action. Yeah. Okay. Now you're going to say, though, that metaphor of comparing the Torah to an ox goad is not enough. You could argue that just like a Dorvan is movable, in other words, it's not a permanent thing, it moves around from place to place, the Dorvan, the metal tip, can fall out, etc., at Divrei Torah Metaltelin. So you could argue maybe Divrei Torah are like that also. They're easily movable and changeable. No, time would blame a masmeris. Therefore, the next metaphor that Kehelas, that Shlomo HaMelech uses, is compares it to nails, where nails are stuck in place. Well, in that case, you could still argue that a nail, it takes away, it doesn't give more. In other words, the nail punches a hole in the wall, and you don't have, the wall never grows around it, the hole always remains a hole over there. So you would argue by the same token that Torah is chas v'shalom a negative thing, it causes, it takes away from a person, it doesn't give them anything good. No, Talmud Leiman, the tree. Therefore, Shlomo continues and says, not just the nails, he uses the word that are planted, meaning manatiyazu, part of a rubber, just as a plant is constantly growing and producing new fruit. Avdibere Torah, parin berabin, the same way words of Torah are constantly fruitful and growing. In other words, it grows you begashnius, it grows you beruchnius. You always come up with new ideas in Torah. It's not just like a nail that's just sitting there in the wall and taking away from the wall. The point would be that if it's metaltal, it means it could easily be changed. It could change with the times, etc. So that it gets worn out, yeah. So therefore we're saying it's like a masma, like a nail that's fixed in place, yeah. Then the pasuk continues. So now when we have all those metaphors, so we understand, in other words, the Torah has all of those advantages. It's like a dervon that keeps you on the straight path. It's like a masma that's fixed in place. It doesn't change with the times. And it's a turim. It grows things in your life, gashmius and ruchnius, rather than just taking away like a nail does. So then, now the pasuk continues, balei asupos, the masters of gatherings. That means elu tamed hachamim sheyoshvin asupos ba'oskin b'Torah. This refers to the tamed hachamim who sit in groups and occupy themselves with learning Torah. Well, when they're learning Torah, halal matamin v'halal matarin, you have one group of chachamim are going to say that something is tamei, and another group are going to say it's tahor. Halal osin v'halal matarin, one group is going to say about something that's osir, and another group is going to say that's mutter. Halal postin v'halal machshirin, one group is going to say that something is posel, and the other one is going to say that's kosher. So, Shema Yoma Odom. So now, with all that, a person might say there's so many different opinions. Heyachani Lomad Torah Me'ata. How am I supposed to learn Torah? How am I supposed to know? How am I supposed to be able to understand all the opinions and to figure out what to actually do? Therefore, the pasuk continues. Talmud Lomar, Kulam Nitnu Meroya Echa. Therefore, the pasuk finishes off. They're all given from one shepherd. Meaning, Kel Echa Nesanon. One Hashem gave all of these different opinions. Haunas Echad Omron. One leader, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu, said them, Mipib Adon Kalamaisim Baruch Hu, in the name of Hashem, who created everything. By Dabra Elakim, that's called Adon Ma'ilu. The Pasuk says Hashem spoke all these words. And it means, in other words, that even you have, the point is, when the different Chachamim have different opinions, it's not that one of them is right and one of them is wrong. Eilu Ve'ilu Dibra Elakim Chayim. And there's many, many different explanations of what exactly that means. One of the many explanations is, and you can find things along this line in Maharal and Siddhus and in various other places, that the idea is each thing in Torah, there's many different, the Memtes Ponim Tomei or Memtes Ponim Torah. There's aspects of it from looking at it from one perspective, it's Tomei, looking at it from a different perspective, it's Torah. All of those perspectives are all within the Torah because all of them, the Chachamim who are, the Maharal explains, in other words, the Chachamim who are learning all these things, they're not getting them from outside sources. They're not getting them from Nevi'im who argue with Moshe Rabbeinu. They're not getting them from other gods, Chas V'Shalom. They're not getting them from other sources outside of Torah. Everything they're saying is based on their analysis of the one Torah that was given by the one Hashem through the one Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, all of them are valid. Each of them is a valid perspective in Torah. So he finishes off. Afata. So you also. How are you supposed to learn? Asay osnecha kaafar keses. Make your ear like a funnel to get everything to absorb everything that you hear. Oknei lachol leiv mevin and acquire for yourself an understanding heart. Lishmayas divrei matamim as divrei matamim to hear what the ones who say it's tahor versus tamei say. As divrei osin as divrei machshirin. The ones who say it's osir versus mutter. As divrei posan as divrei machshirin. The ones who say it's kosher and the one who say it's kosher. So let them all go into your ear like a funnel. And then you have to develop the understanding of the Torah, the understanding to understand what the opinions are and which one is going to actually be a halacha. In fact, that's why we use the metaphor of a funnel, Davka. A funnel, you have a huge amount pours in at one end, and then you have a little bit at a time comes out the other end. So the same way, in other words, you're absorbing everything that you hear from all the different chachamim, and then you filter it out and determine what we actually accept for halacha and what we don't.
First it starts with a negative, mostly in Tommy, then it says the positive. Maybe he's looking for an excuse.
Maybe.
Doesn't he hear the conclusion in the shir at that point? Or?
I don't know. Anyway.
Based on this. Yeah. Based on this, we should accept all these opinions, halacha, if they come from the same source. And
no. Ultimately, when it comes to halacha, lemaisa, there's only one that can be chosen. But we still say that all the other ones, first of all, there may actually be certain cases where we accept one over the other, and other cases where we accept a different one. We often have, for example, in Shulchan Aruch, the halacha is like this opinion, but in Shas Adchak, for example, we can follow the other opinion. But even if not, even if we have, let's say, an opinion of Beis Shammai, which is completely rejected, la halacha, and to say Beis Shammai, Bukhem Bishilu, and Mishnah, well, actually, as far as that, it says that Lost in Lover, the halacha will be like Beis Shammai. But even if we have an opinion that's been completely rejected as halacha, nevertheless, it's still Divrei Elokim Chayim. We still learn it. We still understand it. We still look at the svara behind it, and we still look at what heroes we can learn from it, because it's all ultimately comes from Hashem. Even though in the actual world, you can only pass in halacha one way.
Well, that's not in theory, but give us an example of such a.
So the complaint, the person might say, I'm viewing all these different opinions, how am I supposed to even understand all of them, and how am I supposed to figure out what the bottom line is? So that's what we're saying, that you have to absorb everything, and then you have to listen to everything, and then you have to have a lathe maven to understand what's what. Yeah, so what were you saying?
It's fine in theory to get a knowledge and understanding of all the opinions. But how do you apply that practically? Give us an example, for instance, Shammai and Hillel.
You learn the opinion of Beis Shammai, you understand what their svara is. You learn the opinion of Beis Hillel, you understand what their svara is. Sometimes we even have, by the way, sometimes the Gemara will say, for example, mid Beis Shammai nishma lo Beis Hillel. Based on what Beis Shammai is saying, we can understand better what Beis Hillel's opinion is. And things like that. But the point is, when it comes to practical halacha, of course, you can only learn what Beis Hillel, you can only follow what Beis Hillel is saying. But nevertheless, in terms of learning Torah and in terms of trying to understand Hashem's mind, then Beis Shammai's opinion is an important part of that also.
So are you saying that unless you know and understand both contradicting opinions, you're really not yotiv halacha?
No, we're not saying that at all. Halacha is halacha. What we're talking about here is Talmud Torah. A person has a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And Talmud Torah, you know, we were talking about just before, a little while ago, about the mitzvah, about what exactly women's chiyuv in Talmud Torah is. The halacha is, women are not chayiv in Talmud Torah. However, they're chayiv to know what they need to know in order to live as a yid. So they need to know the halachas that are relevant. They need to know the halachas that are applicable to them. They need to learn, the Rebbe talked about the idea, for example, they need to learn chassidus because they also have a mitzvah of Av Avira. But let's say, for a woman, she doesn't have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah in the sense to learn Torah just in order to understand it where it doesn't have practical ramifications. So let's say, for example, for a woman to learn about the opinions of this Shammai and this Hillel, let's say, is not necessarily something that would be applicable to her. She could do it if she wants to, but she doesn't have the mitzvah of Talmud Torah in that regard. But men have that mitzvah. Men have a mitzvah of learning Torah, lishma, just for the sake of understanding Torah, just for the sake of learning Chochmaser, Ratzon Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even where it doesn't have practical implications. So therefore, that would include, for example, understanding the opinion of Beis Shammai as well.
That's a great point of contention here, because it's being proved over and over again that women have a tremendous degree of intelligence, and that's proven today every day.
What I'm talking about is the actual mitzvah of Talmud Torah. There is a point that has been brought up repeatedly by various Gedolei Yisrael in the last 100 years, that nowadays we live in a time when women are exposed to so many different outside influences. There needs to be schools for women. There need to be, even the Rebbe talked about the idea that women nowadays should learn Gemara because they need to exercise their brains on Torah rather than exercising it on Shlussim. Fine, that's a given, but it's still, nevertheless, the technical mitzvah of Talmud Torah doesn't apply to them. To the extent that they're learning Torah, it's in order that it's basically for practical reasons rather than for a man. The mitzvah is Talmud Torah in and of itself, even where there's no practical outcome of it. That's the basic difference.
I'm referring to the fact that it was said previously that they don't have das, and that has been disproved many times.
Where did we say in this discussion that they don't have das? Where did we ever say in this Gemara that they don't have das? We said noshim. We said noshim apotter. We're going to learn later in the Gemara because it says yeroach kol zechurcha. Cheresh shoyt v'katan have no das. Who said anything about women? We said noshim das.
They have light das. Das colors.
Another matter. Yeah, it means that Bini Yaseira. That Daitan Tala means, among other things, it means, for example, that they're more easily distracted from one thing to another. It doesn't mean that they don't have das. They have a different kind of das than men do. All
right, they have as much das as men.
What?
They have as much das as men, sometimes more.
One second. Daitan Tala doesn't mean they have less das. It means they have a different kind of das. They have a das, which is Tala. It doesn't mean less das.
Nobody what does it mean das. Exactly?
It means that their das is cow. It's light. It's, for example, more easily distracted from one thing to another.
And that's why they don't have to learn Torah?
So the fact that they don't have to learn Torah is, in fact, because the Torah says, "Limad Tamosim as b'neichem," and we learn from that, "B'neichem v'loy b'neisechem." What the reasons are behind that, that's another matter. Dait of Tala is part of that, the Gemara tells us in Sota. Because you can have they're more likely to there's a greater chance that they'll misinterpret things that they learn of Torah. But nevertheless, so whatever the reasons are exactly, I mean ultimately a mitzvah is a mitzvah. You know, we don't need reasons for it. But if we want to look for reasons, yeah, a reason would be they have a different kind of das than men. Their das is better used in other pursuits. But again, as I said, the Rebbe and various other Gdolei Yisrael before him in the last 100 years have talked about that nowadays women are not exclusively in the house as they used to be, and they're anyway exposed to much more outside influences, and therefore it's better that they should be learning Torah even on a higher level, even to the extent, for example, of learning Gemara, and at least if nothing else, then it keeps their das. And yes, their das is still kala, but it keeps that das occupied with something constructive rather than the other. Okay, let's go on in the Gemara. The Loshen Azeh Omalahem, so Rabbi Yeshua said the following words to them after all these drushes. The generation is not orphaned when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is in it. In other words, the fact that you have a Rosh Hashiva like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the generation is not orphaned. You have a great leader. So according to Rashi, that all of the drashas that we just said were said by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, then after them, Rabbi Yeshua is reacting with approval for that. According to Rabbi Hanan and Marsha, that Rabbi Yeshua had said the last drasha, the one about Dibre Chacham Kadar Bonus, fine, but what he's saying is the previous two drashas show us that the generation is not orphaned as long as it has Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in it, and he had given a drasha, that then fits with the second one that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had said. So the Gemara asks, so we have at the beginning of the story when Rabbi Yochanan and Baruch and Rabbi Elazar Chisma came to visit Rabbi Yeshua, at first they didn't want to tell him what's going on with this Medrash and about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's Doroshes until he pressured them into it. Why didn't they just tell him straight out? He asked them to begin with, Ma Chidush Yesh Bes Medrash Hayom. They should have right away told him. The reason is from Maisa Shahoy. The reason they were careful about that is because of a previous incident that had happened. The Tanya, Maisa Rav Yosef ben Dermaskis, it happened with Rav Yosef ben Dermaskis, Shaholach Lahakul Pnei Rav Elazar Lud. He went to visit Rav Elazar, also on a Yom Tov for Pashtus, in Lud, which is where Rav Elazar lived. Omer Loi and Rav Elazar, it says over here Rav Elazar actually, but really, based on various sources, it seems it's really supposed to be Rav Eliezer, as in Rav Eliezer ben Hurkos. So he lives in Lud. Again, he asked of Yosef ben Dermaskis, Ma Chidush Hoy Ves Medrash Hayom, what new thing were they discussing in the Ves Medrash? And unlike Rabbi Yochanan and Broka and Rabbi Elazar Chisma, who didn't want to answer right away, and they said, Meimecha on Rishosin, Rabbi Yosef ben Dermaskis right away said, he said, Amalei Nimnu Vagomru, they voted in the Ves Medrash, and they decided, Amun Umoyav Ma'asrin Maisa Oni Vashvis. During Shemitah year, Jews who live in the countries of Ammon and Moab have to give Maisa on. Now, what it is like this. Daraisa, of course, the mitzvahs of Truma and Maisa only apply in Eretz Yisrael. Nevi'im, at the time of Golas Bavel, made a takana that also in Bavel they have to give Truma and Maisa. At a later time, the Chachamim also made a similar takana as far as Mitzrayim. Now, at the time that we're talking about over here, in Rabbi Eliezer's times, there was an argument, what about Ammon and Moav? What should be the din with them? They should have to give Truma and Meiser as well, but so during the 6 years, obviously everybody's going to be doing the same thing. Meiser Sheni, the first, second, fourth, and fifth years. Meiser Oni, the third and sixth year. But what do you do during Shemitah? So the Mishnah over there discusses that in Babel there was one rule, in Mitzrayim there was a different rule. So now the question is, which one should apply in Ammon and Moav? Rashi says, by the way, Ammon and Moav, we're talking about the lands that used to belong to Ammon and Moav and were conquered by Sichon and Og, and then in turn were taken over by the Jewish people and assigned to Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Manasseh. Tosfos says not necessarily, actually. Those lands, of course, are going to have the same kedusha as Eretz Yisrael proper. Rather, what we're talking about over here, we're talking about the areas of Ammon and Moav that Sichon and Og never conquered. So therefore, these are places, in other words, that remain in the possession of the nations of Ammon and Moab, and now, in the time of the second Bismikdash, and afterwards, you have Jews living over there. So what's the din with them? So they were arguing whether it should be Maaser Sheni or Maaser Oni. So now, they voted that they were going to give Maaser Oni during Shemitah. Omaloi, so Rabbi Eliezer, was upset with Rabbi Yossi on chat. The reason why is because Rashi says he was upset that Rabbi Yossi had said that in the Beis Medrash they voted on this, when in fact Rabbi Eliezer was going to explain that this is not a new halacha that just came up now. This is actually an old halacha that goes back to the Anshei Knesset Sagdol. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi ben Damascus shouldn't be just attributing it to the contemporary Chacham. There is a different explanation, in fact, that what Rabbi Eliezer is upset about is, so that's what we're saying. So Rabbi Yossi ben Damascus had right away volunteered the information. He didn't say Memechon or Shoisin, etc., like the other Chachamim. So therefore, now Rabbi Eliezer is upset at his great height. And that's why we're saying, therefore, Rabbi Eliezer Chisma and Rabbi Yechon and Breuker in the previous story were more careful about that, and they were demurring and not wanting to say until Rabbi Yeshua pressured them into it. Anyway. So Rabbi Eliezer says to him, Omele Yossi, pshoit yadecha, stick out your hands, v'kavel enecha, and receive your eyes. Now that can mean, Pasha, in other words, that Rabbi Eliezer calls that his eyes should fall out of his head. There is a different possibility, though. The word kavel also is Aramaic for dark. So it can mean, pshoit yadecha, stick out your hands, like to accept that you're going to get your punishment, v'kavel enecha, and your eyes will grow dark. You're going to go blind. Anyway, Koshet Yadav, a Kabbal Einav. So sure enough, he did that, and he went blind. Bacha Rabbi Eliezer, v'omer. Rabbi Eliezer then started crying and said, Soyd Hashem li'rei, Rabbi Rishol Adiyam. As the passage says, the secret of Hashem goes to those who fear him, and his bris, and he informs them of his bris. In other words, Rabbi Eliezer was going to say now that this that they voted on, the halacha that they determined, is actually an ancient halacha that they didn't even know about, which they, Hashem helped them to reach the proper conclusion. Why was he crying? So the reason is because he's saying, in other words, like this, if I had been there in the Beis Medrash, they wouldn't have had to go through this whole thing of voting on it and discussing it, whatever. He could have told them straight out what the din is. Now remember, this is, why is Rabbi Eliezer not in the Beis Medrash? Well, we have the famous story involving Tanur Shalach Noi, where they damned him because he was sticking to his opinion against all the rabbim over there. So therefore, now he's crying that that's the situation, that he's barred from the Beis Medrash, and he wasn't able to tell this. So Amalo, he tells Rabbi Yossi ben Damascus, Leich emor lahem, go tell them, Al tachushu l'minyanchem, don't worry about what you voted on, don't worry that maybe you came to the wrong conclusion in halacha. I have the following Kabbalah from my Rebbe, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, Shekibo me Rabbi, Sheshoma me Rabbi, who heard from his Rebbe, the Rabbi me Rabbi, and his Rebbe heard it from his Rebbe, all the way, Hilchos Alamoshe Misinai, Ha'alocha Alamoshe Misinai. Now, we just said it's a Takona of the Anshei Knesset Sagdol. So on the side of it here, it brings a note from the Rosh that says that sometimes we have something which says halacha l'moshe b'sinai, doesn't literally mean that it's halacha l'moshe b'sinai, it just means that that's firmly established as if it was halacha l'moshe b'sinai. So this would be an example of that. Anyway, that Ammon and Moav ma'aser ma'aser oni b'shvi'is. That in fact, yes, Ammon and Moav, they take ma'aser oni rather than ma'aser sheni during Shemitah. Ma'atam, now why would that be so? Why are they taking ma'aser oni? Why are they not keeping the din of Shemitah? Well, Harbet Krak and Kovshu Ola Mitzrayim, there are many cities in Eretz Yisrael that when they came from Mitzrayim, they conquered. Veloy Kovshum Ola Babel, but when they resettled Eretz Yisrael, when the Ola Babel resettled Eretz Yisrael, they did not resettle some of those cities, and therefore they did not declare them to have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And the reason why that works, says Rebbe Eliezer, the original Kedusha that Eretz Yisrael got in the time of Yeshua was only a temporary thing, not for all time. It went away when the first Beis Mikdash was destroyed and the Yidden were taken into Golos. So now they had to be Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael again when they came back. So now Rashi over here learns, and so does the Ravid and some other Rishonim, that second Kedusha that they made in the time of Ezra lasts forever. And therefore, according to that opinion, all the mitzvahs that flow for Eretz nowadays would apply to Rabban. The Rambam disagrees with that actually and says that second Kedusha also disappeared once the second Beis Mikdash was destroyed, and when Mashiach comes, there's going to need to be a Kedusha Shlishis. But it's machlokes nowadays whether the mitzvahs that flow for Eretz are Daraisa or Rabban. But anyway, Rebbe Eliezer is saying that the first Kedusha was only for a while. It didn't outlive the Churban Bayis Rishon. So now, therefore, the remainder of Eretz Yisrael, the second Kedusha that they had from the time of Ezra still exists in those parts of Eretz Yisrael that Oled Babel did not take over. However, therefore, now you have a problem. What are the poor people in Eretz Yisrael going to do during Shemitah? So therefore, the Chachamim left Ammon and Moab. They said, we're not going to declare those areas Kodesh, and they made that they should give Ma'isa Oni, Kodesh Yismuchu Aleh and Aniyim Bashvitz, in order that the poor people should be able to rely on them during Shemitah and be able to get Ma'isa Oni from them. So given that Ammon and Moab are not Chayiv in Torah anyway, then the Chachamim could decide whatever they wanted. So Rashi says, with the Amshek Nesagdela, could decide whichever they want, whether it's going to be Ma'isa Sheni or Ma'isa Oni, and because these places are close to Eretz Yisrael, they decided that it should be Ma'isa Oni, so that the Aniyim have what to live off of. So therefore, so Rabbi Eliezer is saying, the Chachamim, you, Rabbi Yossi ben Damascus, are telling me that the Chachamim voted on that. You should know, they didn't even have to vote on it. It's actually a halacha as firmly established as halacha Moshe Sinai that goes back to the Amshek Nesagdela. So Tana, we learn in a brayta, La'achash nisyash v'daita, after Rabbi Eliezer calmed down, and he wasn't upset with Rabbi Yosef in Damascus anymore, Omo, he said, Yehirotzen sheyachzu eni Yosef l'mkoymon, may it be Hashem's will that Yosef's eyes should return to their places. So in other words, if it's that his eyes fell out, then now they should go back in, and if it's that his eyes became blind, then they should become unblinded. And sure enough, v'chozu, and they returned, and he was able to see again. An interesting explanation about why was Rabbi Eliezer so machped on Rabbi Yosef in Damascus, just telling him this halacha. Okay, so you know it's Menachik Mesagolim, so what's his problem? Because maybe by saying that, besides that we said that he said it without first saying the Mecha and Roshosin, etc., of saying in a respectful way like that, there's also a possibility that maybe he was saying to Rabbi Eliezer, in effect, look what you missed out by not being there with the Beis Medrash. They voted on a very important halacha, and if you had been there, then you could have been participating in that discussion as well. And Rabbi Eliezer was offended by that, because it's not his fault that he's not there. They had banned him, and he couldn't change his mind, because he never said anything that he didn't hear from his Rebbeim. So therefore, that's why he was upset with Rabbi Yosef ben Damascus. And he's telling him that, don't think I missed anything. In fact, I know this halacha, and I know, unlike them, that it's actually a halacha l'moshe Sinai. In the previous story also, with Rabbi Lozor Chisma and Rabbi Yechon ben Broka, the particular drushes that they quoted to him may have also been along the same lines, that Rabbi Yeshua had not been in the Beis Medrash for a long time, and they're hinting to him that maybe he needs to return. We see by Hakel how important it is to be there. We see by Eshashem HaMauta Ayoyim how important it is that all Jewish people should be Ba'achdus. And we see from Divrei Chacham Kadovonius how important it is to be there in the Beis Medrash when they're discussing Torah. So therefore, they may have also been hinting to Rabbi Yeshua that he should be returning to the Beis Medrash. So unlike Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua wasn't machped on them, but because at least they said it with the respectful thing first, that Memecha and Roshosin, etc. Okay. So, 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 uh, So now, so we'll take up tomorrow morning, Rav Hashem. We're going to talk about what a shoita is, and then we're going to continue with the rest of the people in the Mishnah, Rav Hashem.